Welcome to another episode of the Oncology on the Go podcast. I'm your host, Russ Conroy. Today's episode features Dr. Rachel Milstein, nurse practitioner Lauren Winters, and Dr. Amy Commander, all from Massachusetts General Hospital. They spoke about their article titled Implementing a Multidisciplinary Lifestyle Medicine Clinic for Cancer Survivorship, which was published in the November 2024 issue of the journal Oncology. The authors discussed how a multidisciplinary lifestyle medicine clinic can improve the quality of life among survivors of cancer, and highlighted ways to potentially address barriers to the implementation of lifestyle medicine in oncology care.
What was the rationale for conducting this case study related to the development of a multidisciplinary lifestyle medicine clinic in oncology?
I wanted to start by expressing our gratitude to our team and the clinic, and of course, the patients who were featured in this case study paper. In particular, wanted to recognize our co-authors on this paper. So aside from the three of us here, our colleague Carol Sullivan, our dietitian, our colleague Dr. Stephanie Eisenstadt, and Dr. Emily Sorg. So in terms of this paper, we wanted to get the message out because there's currently over 18 million cancer survivors in the United States, and this population is projected to increase to 26 million by 2040. And so we see this growing need to address the complex care needs of this population. At the same time, cancer survivorship can be a time of heightened worry about ending treatment, fear of cancer recurrence, and concerns about the health consequences of treatment. So several authoritative bodies in our field, such as the American Society of Clinical Oncology, or ASCO, American Cancer Society, CDC, American College of Lifestyle Medicine, et cetera, have begun to recommend incorporating lifestyle medicine education and practice into the continuum of cancer care. In this paper, we talk about the six pillars of lifestyle medicine, but addressing these pillars in the survivorship period can improve quality of life, physical functioning, and in many cases, reduce the risk of recurrence and development of additional cancers. So all of this is to say the need is there, the awareness is growing, but there isn't a lot of kind of incorporated or commonplace support for these lifestyle medicine consultations and health behavior change in cancer survivorship. So our team, it's a multidisciplinary team of oncologists and supportive oncology clinicians, developed this multidisciplinary lifestyle medicine clinic for cancer survivors. Originally, the clinic was developed by our founder, Dr. Betsy O'Donnell. And here in this paper and in this podcast, we're going to present two particular cases that multiple members of our team have seen over the past year, because we thought that it really helped to highlight the work that we're doing and the different types of skills and expertise of our team that can contribute to positive outcomes for patients.
Great. Thank you for the context there. I know in the article, there's a brief discussion of some of the key lifestyle medicine pillars. What are those medicine pillars, and how does this multidisciplinary clinic work to exemplify those pillars?
Yes, thank you. Such an important foundation for lifestyle medicine. So the American College of Lifestyle Medicine provides this wonderful, like I said, or like you said, a six-pillar foundation of what is lifestyle medicine. And that includes the following. The first I'll mention is physical activity. So engaging in movement practice. Every day, ideally, moving more than sitting. Ultimately, there's sort of a prescription, sort of, let's say, an ideal or optimum amount of movement that's been associated with, you know, multiple health outcomes. And that's about 150 to 300 minutes a week. And the type is also important. So not just the number of minutes of exercise a week or physical activity a week, but also the intensity. So in a relatively healthy individual, about moderate level intensity. So the little trick we use is you can talk but not sing while you're doing the activity to assess whether you're doing moderate level intensity. And then along with that type of aerobic activity. It also would include some flexibility exercises as well as strength training. So that could be resistance exercises, body weight exercises, or even the use of weights. And that's going to be dependent on the individual's ability. So physical activity, number one. The second would be nutrition, and that's the recommendations from the American College of Lifestyle Medicine recommend whole food, predominantly plant-based diet with a variety of colorful fruits and vegetables, whole grains, and then on the other end, a limitation of certain foods like red meats and processed meats, for example. The third would be sleep. So getting enough rest, not just enough rest, but quality rest. So we talk about restorative sleep, and we talk about ways to use lifestyle, and that may include some of the other pillars to help support healthy sleep, and then specific strategies for folks to use to relax as they sort of work their way into their, sleep time for the night. And that'll include even stress management type strategies. We also assess for more problematic sleep disturbances like insomnia, and that's also important because it often may require further intervention than lifestyle alone. Stress management is another very important pillar, and of course, it impacts many of the other, if not all of the other pillars. In an individual day, stress levels can range from low to high, and certainly with a cancer diagnosis, stress can sort of remain high for a lot of reasons. And so part of lifestyle medicine is teaching strategies to elicit the relaxation response and learn mindfulness that one can use in small and large moments to manage the effects of stress. The last two, avoidance of risky substances. This will include things like avoiding alcohol, tobacco, and other substances that harm rather than help. And finally, and maybe some might argue most importantly, social support and relationships is a critical pillar, right? So have the support behind you to live your life, to feel included and supported is key, especially for our cancer survivors. And so we always enjoy talking about social support within the six pillar context. You, I think, asked about how we exemplify those pillars. So we focus on the six pillars as part of any intervention, any touch point through the lifestyle medicine clinic, whether that be an individual consultation, whether as part of our group visits, where we actually theme each group visit to each of these pillars, or in our annual webinars, where we really enjoy coming up with interesting ways to present the six pillars to patients. This is free and available for any of our patients to view. We record them and have them on our website so folks can view them later on and providers can tell patients that they exist. But we, like I said, address the six pillars in those webinars and try to keep it fresh each year with the most up-to-date information for our patients. So certainly the six pillars are always there.
Great breakdown of all the individual pillars and how you work to exemplify them. Thank you. Now, as part of a multidisciplinary clinic, I imagine that involves a lot of moving parts and collaboration among different departments. How do multidisciplinary team members, such as board-certified physicians, nurse practitioners, registered dietitians, and clinical psychologists, work together to elevate the level of care for patients?
That's such a great question, and thank you for posing it. And I think just our discussion today is a first way to illustrate the power of working with a multidisciplinary team. I'm here with my colleague, Dr. Milstein, Lauren Winters. These are incredible colleagues with different types of training, but bring so much expertise to the care for our patients with cancer. We often joke that it's not really a joke, but treating patients with cancer is a team sport. We really do value the multidisciplinary approach, and it's so beneficial, certainly for our patients, but also for us. We learn so much from each other all the time, and it's really such a privilege to work with such an incredible team. Just to give a quick highlight, as an example of how a patient is seen in our clinic and how we really promote this multidisciplinary approach, a patient with any type of cancer diagnosis can be referred to our multidisciplinary lifestyle medicine clinic. And that individual, for example, would see either a lifestyle medicine certified nurse practitioner or physician. Were this initially a review, as Lauren just highlighted, of the six pillars of lifestyle medicine and a baseline assessment? And that patient may highlight with the healthcare provider which area of lifestyle medicine he or she wishes to focus on first. Maybe that's sleep disturbance, which unfortunately is very prevalent in cancer survivors. Maybe it's how do I start an exercise regimen? I don't even know where to start. So you can imagine every patient will have a different issue that individual wishes to focus on. So, and that first visit, which is so powerful, the patient's wishes are reviewed, and then that patient can be referred appropriately to the services that can address those needs. And we're very fortunate to work at the Mass General Cancer Center with an array of services available to our patients with cancer. An individual who needs to work on sleep can be referred to a behavioral psychologist to learn techniques such as cognitive behavioral therapy for insomnia or other tools to help address sleep disturbance. An individual who is really facing challenges with nutrition and how to optimize nutrition after completing chemotherapy would be referred to our oncology registered dietitian team. So, as you can imagine, we're so fortunate to link our patients to all the incredible resources. And that's just a few. We have the Benson Henry Mind Body Medicine Program, which really teaches patients skills to help manage stress and improve resilience. We have a sexual health clinic. We have our wonderful physiatry and physical therapy colleagues. And I could go on and on. We're just so fortunate to have these services. And many cancer centers do have these services, but sometimes in our busy oncology clinics, we don't always connect our patients to the right service. So we really take pride in our lifestyle medicine program that we connect the patient to the services that he or she needs so that individual can get the benefits and optimize their health and well-being, which is the most important goal.
I see. Thank you. Now, zeroing in, your article did focus on two specific patient cases who underwent treatment at this clinic. What did intervention look like for the two patient cases highlighted in this publication, and how did outcomes improve for these patients?
So I'll get started with this, and I want to preface this answer by saying that we've seen many patients. In particular, this paper talks about the past year. We've seen many patients, and there have been many success stories, as well as cases maybe that have different versions of what success looks like. So even choosing these two cases was really challenging. And these two particular cases were chosen because they really illustrate like the depth and breadth of the work that the multidisciplinary team and clinic is capable of. Of note, the patients did, they consented to being described. They also have read and approved and helped really edit their case presentations that are found in the paper. So really want to send our gratitude, of course, to them because they really, I think, are just really fantastic fantastic people to have worked with, and in some cases are still working with. So case one, he was in his early 30s. I was diagnosed with stage 3C seminoma. He did have 4 cycles of chemotherapy, and following completion of his cancer treatment, he had no evidence of disease. So this is good news. So he was then at that point referred to our multidisciplinary cancer center, to the lifestyle medicine program, because he was feeling ready to start addressing his health from here on out. As a young person, kind of just went through this life-changing diagnosis, which really happened fast for him. He also underwent surgery. So he had some things he really wanted to work on to get his life and his health back on track. So he first met with our team's physician, who really focused again on these six pillars of lifestyle medicine. And during that initial interview, he disclosed that he had an alcohol use disorder. He had, at that point, untreated attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, or ADHD, as well as a history of obsessive compulsive disorder, so OCD. He also had a body mass index at the time we met him in the obese category. And he was really struggling with healthy eating, healthy meal planning, and finding ways and times to exercise. So after this initial consult, he was referred to our team's psychologist, so that would be me, ultimately then to our team's psychiatrist, as well as our oncology registered dietitian, to really kind of help him address these changes in a holistic way. I'll sort of give you the upshot up here at the front, but he really has done a tremendous job. And as he progressed through his recovery, He was really able to engage with his healthy lifestyle practices. He improved his dietary habits. He has been losing weight, increasing his exercise, and achieving and maintaining sobriety. So, just briefly, we started off by talking about physical activity and nutrition. So, he had many, many barriers to engaging in physical activity. He really used to love physical activity. He loved skateboarding, actually, was his preferred activity, but he wasn't able to due to neuropathy in his feet, peripheral neuropathy. He did consult with his oncology team, and his symptoms actually did diminish over time, and he was able to get back to regular skateboarding and exercise. We also talked a lot about his values, right? So again, this life-changing diagnosis in your 30s, it's really a time of great development, for our kind of personal and professional lives. And he really found a way to prioritize his hobbies, his he found balance with his work. He cut back on his work hours. He's able to really pursue his creative outlets, which he has many of. Later in the process, he did, of course, as I mentioned, meet with our dietitian, and he really has been cutting back on processed foods, increasing fruits and vegetables, increasing water, cutting back on things like candy and sugar sweetened beverages. So he's been really pleased with his progress. He has actually lost over 50 pounds as of our last meeting. This is about over the course of about a year. Then we worked on behavioral therapy for substance, reducing substance use. And he had started off by reporting drinking 4 to 6 beers a night. And this, of course, was related to his anxiety and also just the social aspect of it. He also had quit smoking cannabis at the time we met him, given his cancer treatment, but he was still using edibles, cannabis edibles, many, many nights per week. He was actually finding that his alcohol was impacting his sleep, weight, motivation, and cognition, and also just making it hard to wake up in the morning for work. We started by focusing on what we call motivational interviewing for considering abstinence from substance use. And he decided that, of his use spectrum, he was feeling like he was ready to consider giving up his alcohol, or at least cutting back. At that point, he started to meet with our cancer center psychiatrist, like I mentioned. She helped him start medications, which are still being used. And he's had really fantastic results from both of those with his anxiety and his alcohol use. And we didn't focus as much on sleep and social connections because those things were actually going pretty well for him. But the reduction in fact, abstinence from alcohol did affect and improve his sleep and his energy, and also his functioning at work. And he has strong social support, and that continues now. So again, overall, he's been abstinent for over a year. He does not experience cravings, which really is, again, a really tremendous accomplishment on his part. He continues to use cannabis edibles several nights per week. At this point, it's not something he wants to modify. And he's finding great satisfaction, again, continuing with his weight loss, continuing with his active lifestyle, decrease of processed foods. Again, his anxiety symptoms are almost at this point at a point of resolution. So he is finding meaning, direction in his work and his creative activities.
Every time I hear the story, it's so inspiring and makes me feel really good about being a part of this program. So I'm going to talk about the second case. This was a young woman in her mid-40s who was quite busy with life prior to her cancer diagnosis, in the middle of a master's degree, doing a lot of freelance work, working on a book. And otherwise, other than a prior history of a very small, thankfully very treatable melanoma, a very healthy person, which is often the case with breast cancer. She was diagnosed with an early stage breast cancer, again in her mid-40s, and also found to have a genetic mutation, had her surgery and chemotherapy, and ultimately radiation, and currently on an anti-estrogen therapy. So that's sort of the medical and surgical and radiation prescription. But like I said, at the time of her diagnosis, she was in her mid-40s and pretty busy, hectic sort of life, and dealing with some increased stress. So the stress was already there, and it was impacting her lifestyle practices, which, like I said, were fairly good as a healthy person, just from the stress. So she had sort of already started to experience a decrease in her regular exercise patterns, had previously run marathons and been very regimented. That had kind of fallen off in the setting of stress. Again, because of sort of stress and work, she started to sort of not followed as healthy of a diet and was eating a bit more takeout, sometimes skipping meals, working late, which resulted in her sleeping less. And sort of things just kind of were not quite where she wanted them to be. And then in comes a cancer diagnosis, which, because of all of the stress that's related to a cancer diagnosis and the side effects, including fatigue, it was very difficult for her to sort of take on returning to the healthy lifestyle behaviors, without some support. So she had discussed this with her oncology social worker, who I'm so thrilled thought of the lifestyle medicine program and made a referral. And so we got to see her at that point for a healthy lifestyle consultation. And so I met with her for that initial visit, and at the time she was going through radiation, so starting to feel a little bit better, a little less fatigue, and sort of ready to make some changes. Like, she was very, very ready to start talking about what she could do to start taking some steps. And we certainly sort of started that conversation by, laying out the six pillars of lifestyle medicine and starting to set some goals in each area. And so one of the first things that she had mentioned to me was regarding some pain and discomfort in her shoulder on the side of her surgery, and that was limiting her exercise activity. So we decided together that we would have her meet with a physical therapist to start to help with some of that post-operative pain and tightness and discomfort. We talked about the goals around the 150 to 300 minutes a week of exercise, and she set a personal goal to start building up to that over time. It was not going to happen that first week or even the second week, but she was very clear about her aim to sort of build slowly and not re-injure herself, and also to work with physical therapy. So that was a fantastic start, I thought, to return to exercise. We also identified in that conversation this sort of pattern of sort of like disordered eating and not quite eating the type of optimal diet that she had already read about and knew was important for cancer survivorship. And so I referred her to our oncology dietitian, Carol Sullivan, who met with her for her own comprehensive conversation and evaluation. And they set off to work on preparing healthy meals or a healthy meal plan that she could follow and really start to reestablish a healthy eating pattern, right? Not just the quality of the foods, but the pattern that really would be better able to suit her energy and nutrient needs. And that gave her a lot of empowerment to be able to do that again with support. In regards to stress reduction, so I mentioned that was something going on even before her cancer diagnosis. And this was someone who actually had already tried a number of different things in and out of her life, yoga and meditations. And these were things that were not unfamiliar. And so it was just a matter of kind of sorting out, again, what kind of support she needed to figure out where to start, where to restart, where to resume. And she chose to incorporate short meditations and breathing practices. This was something she could do in small bites throughout her day when she was feeling stressed and allow her to, again, get grounded and return to whatever tasks she needed. And it also helped her manage her fatigue. And so that was really wonderful that she sort of drew on a toolbox that she already had, and that, we sort of worked with her to support that process. And then lastly, around sleep, again, I mentioned that sleep was already sort of a little off kilter prior to her diagnosis. And so we really worked on talking through sleep hygiene regimen, which is a critical aspect of the lifestyle intervention for sleep, is to find patterns and practices that support healthy sleep. And for her, that was going to be managing screen time at bedtime. And so that was something she sort of chose to focus on reducing. And that really did help get her to bed earlier and get her on a more healthy sleeping pattern so that she could have more energy during the day to manage all of the things she was managing. Lastly, social connections. She had reported to us that there were some challenges maintaining certain friendships, which often is the case going through cancer. Some folks show up and some folks don't. And just walking through that and the relationship she had with the social worker also supported that. And just finding ways to make connections, new friendships in some cases, but just the idea that there was an opportunity to focus on that. She also participated in our group visit program and I think really benefited from being able to connect with other people who were also experiencing a lot of the things she had experienced in her cancer treatment. She also had such great practices as a foundation that I think she really brought a lot to others in terms of sharing what had worked for her, some strategies she had tried. And I saw in the group visits, which is virtual, so I see everybody's faces really light up when she was talking and listen to hear what she was sharing. So, not only did she benefit, but she also, by just being a participant in those group visits, benefited others. And last I heard, she really has kept up with her goals in getting back to her distance running and is training for a marathon, which is so fantastic. And we're so thrilled for the progress that she made. She was really just, I think, a wonderful example of someone who, with the right support, really had the power within her the whole time. And so I was very glad to sort of be part of that journey and see her really, I think, thrive at this point. So that was just a fantastic experience. And so many players, social work, dietitian, physical therapy, you can see how really the multidisciplinary team is really, really key and came together to sort of support this patient.
Thank you both for sharing those patient cases. What are the next steps for improving the implementation of lifestyle medicine in oncology care?
That's such a great question. And I think these two cases that my colleagues just highlighted really demonstrate the immense benefit of integrating lifestyle medicine into oncology care, which I would like to say is absolutely imperative for oncology care. And I think it's the wave of the future. I think many of us are aware of this concept of whole person health, which has actually been put forth by the NIH, specifically the National Center for Complementary and Integrative Health. Really, it's kind of a goal thinking about the concept of providing care for the whole patient, not just their disease or their organs, but thinking about the patient at a biological, behavioral, social, and environmental level. And that is exactly what we're doing in our multidisciplinary program. We care for the whole patient, we care for the family, we think about social connection, we think about their environment, their access to healthy food, their ability to perform physical activity, as these cases illustrated so beautifully. In terms of next steps, I should say that ASCO, American Society of Clinical Oncology, a few years ago did do a survey of oncology providers such as myself to see about our knowledge about the role of lifestyle factors in oncology care and assess barriers to implementation. And they did identify a few key points, which I would like to highlight for your listeners. Number one, lack of education on these topics for oncologists. I can attest, many years of training, did I have specific training on nutrition for cancer patients, how to do an exercise prescription for cancer patients, how to counsel my patients on weight management, how to improve their sleep. I could go on and on. And I've really learned these tools through the field of lifestyle medicine. And I would like to emphasize that the education piece is way up there, it's very important. Number two, often during our busy follow-up clinic visits with our patients, we don't have time to address all of the issues that Rachel and Lauren just highlighted in these two cases. So having a dedicated lifestyle medicine program is absolutely key to provide our patients with counsel about all of these issues. And then number three, unfortunately, there's a lack of programs for cancer patients to focus on weight management, nutrition, physical activity, and all the pillars of lifestyle medicine that we've outlined in this discussion. So these three areas are really an opportunity that can be focused on moving forward. And we're just proud at the Mass General Cancer Center that we're paving the way, if you would like to use that term. And we're so excited to have this publication to put this out there so other colleagues at other centers can learn from us, both from our paper and this opportunity to speak with you today. So thank you so much. We're so honored to highlight this important work, which we're also passionate about.
Considering everything that we've talked about today, what do you hope your colleagues take away from this conversation?
I think that we would love for more clinics, more hospitals, more programs to implement a clinic like this, even if it's not, a broad multidisciplinary clinic to address the lifestyle medicine factors from different perspectives that the different kind of professionals can offer, would just be a huge win for patient care.
I would say that I just encourage my colleagues to ask patients about how their cancer and cancer treatments has affected their lifestyle. The specifics, the six pillars, ask them in the visits. May not have the answers, but thinking about our multidisciplinary colleagues, our allied health professionals, there are avenues for patients to get more support. So just starting by asking and getting a sense of what their experience has been is critical. And then, yes, like Rachel said, implementing lifestyle medicine in your center is absolutely wonderful. But I would also say there's a great opportunity to get education. Each individual provider can take the American College of Lifestyle Medicine certification program, which it's really an expansive program, lots of education about lifestyle counseling. And that really, I think for me was critical to feel strong in that foundation and be able to talk with patients with more confidence. So I definitely recommend, since we all didn't get as enough of that type of education in our training as professionals, that there it is out there. And that's one of the places where I'd recommend obtaining it.
I'll just end with one last quote. A journey of 1,000 miles begins with a single step. And that's from the Chinese philosopher Lao Tzu, one of my favorite quotes. So if you're a healthcare provider listening and you don't know where to get started, we're happy to help you. Reach out, just take that first step. As my colleagues have noted, maybe just start by asking your patient about their lifestyle habits, and maybe just bringing it up in a visit will encourage someone to think, well, maybe it's time to start that exercise program or to try to incorporate more plants into my diet. So that is what I'd really encourage people to do. And if you're a patient listening, this applies to you as well. We know that patients who are able to start incorporating these tools into their routine feel better, feel more empowered over their care. And again, the data suggests improvement in quality of life, well-being, and in many cases, outcome from cancer. So I think that's a really important message to share at the end.
Don't forget to subscribe to the Oncology On the Go podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or anywhere podcasts are available. Or listen online at cancernetwork.com/resources/podcasts. The Oncology On the Go podcast is the official podcast of cancernetwork.com, the home of the journal Oncology. For more information, visit us at cancernetwork.com and find us on Twitter at Cancer Network without the O, or on Facebook and LinkedIn at cancer-network.